Welcome to Historically St. Pete, a weekly conversation where we explore the truths and possibly the myths of the people and events that created the Sunshine City. My name is Rui Farias. I have the best job in town. I'm the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History. Located on the St. Pete Pier, the museum has been sharing the stories of the Sunshine City for 102 years, and we're happy to share those stories with you here on Radio St. Pete. So nestled in a very rustic-looking area of central Pinellas County is what I and us history nerds consider like our own version of Disney World. Of course, I'm talking about Heritage Village, a 21-acre county park wonderland of Pinellas County history. Our guest today is Monica Drake, who, as the director of Heritage Village, has a job just as cool as mine. So welcome, Monica. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Rui. And I concur, us history nerds, we do know that we have the best jobs in town.
That's right. So, you know, when I lead our historic trolley tours or boat tours, and, you know, and I've encountered so many residents who are new to St. Petersburg, and when I ask them, for instance, like, hey, have you been to the Museum of History? Like, half of them say no, of course. So for those new residents who haven't discovered our cool historic cultural center in central Pinellas County, tell us all about Heritage Village.
Yeah, so Heritage Village, and just a note on that, sometimes it's not even people from out of town, but it's residents that might not even know that, you know, the St. Pete Museum of History exists, or we hear all the time when people come on site that have been longtime residents of Pinellas County, when did this place get here? And it's like, well, we've been here for some time. We've been here centrally located in Pinellas County since 1976, so I'm excited that we have our 50th anniversary coming up in just a little less than 2 years. So that's something maybe I can touch on a little bit more later. But Heritage Village, for those people who don't know, is a 21-acre cultural museum, living history park that is a part of the Parks and Conservation Resources Department within the government of Pinellas County. So we are super fortunate to have the foresightedness of residents back almost 50 years ago now, the Junior League of Clearwater, some commissioners at the time, Ralph Reed, who was one of the earliest official historians of Pinellas County, and other dedicated citizens who started collecting, preserving, and exhibiting the wonderful history of Pinellas County. And that really takes us up until, you know, today. We continue on with that mission to collect, preserve, and exhibit Pinellas County history. It's a part of our philosophy. It's a part of our goals. When we are collecting or creating exhibits or thinking about creating programming, our mission is to focus on exclusively Pinellas County history.
So I know you guys, and if the folks have never been there, it's a fantastic afternoon or morning to go spend to wander through the park and absorb all this history from the county. But, you know, some of the coolest things that you have, obviously, are the structures that have been saved and moved there. So I'm going to go through a list here, and I want you to tell us a little bit about some of these. Like, for instance, the McMullen Coachman House.
Okay, so just to start out really quick, I want to say that these houses, I think for the people who do know about Heritage Village, they often think, you know, when was this village incorporated? Or, you know, why do I care about this family that lived at Heritage or in these houses that have now been moved to Heritage Village? And I just want to quickly state that Heritage Village is not an incorporated village. Those houses have been moved from their original locations within Pinellas County to the site at Heritage Village for preservation purposes, which is really something, again, like I said, forward thinking of our county to do. Not every county has an open air living history museum such as Pinellas or as Heritage Village. So this is really a great offering for people in the community. And what's more is these buildings tell more of a story. If you're trying to find a reason to come to Heritage Village and care about these buildings, it's far more interesting than just simply the people who raised them and lived in them. Although their stories are incredibly interesting, what you often learn from these buildings is that they tell us about the materials that were available at the time when they were built, settlement patterns, politics, agriculture, climate, and so much more. So there's kind of a radius of information around these buildings, far more than just the people that lived in them. And so maybe we can touch a little bit on both the people that lived in them, and also some of those other unique details. And so the first one you asked about was
the McMullen House, yeah.
The cabin.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is a super important structure on site. It's, in fact, the oldest extant building in Pinellas County. And this building was actually built in 1852 by Captain James Paramore McMullen, who came down from Georgia into this area. At the time, he was suffering from consumption, which we know today as tuberculosis. And there were there was literature at the time that people had access to that said, come down to the Zephyrs of Florida and the Gulf Coast, and you perhaps will be cured of your consumption. So he moved down this way, liked it, was actually cured of consumption, which at that time, from what I understand, was quite impressive. And subsequently, his family followed him down. The log cabin was built, like I said, in 1852, and it was built of rough-hewn logs. So, again, going back to that kind of understanding of what are these buildings really about, it's about more than just the people that lived in there, but the materials of the day. So you didn't have any sawmills down in the area at this time. You didn't have any railroads down in the area at this time. The railroads were not coming down yet. So the McMullens had to cut their own lumber and assemble their own buildings from these massive pieces of lumber and put them together with pegs. They didn't have, a great resource for nails. They used clays to kind of chink up some of the like areas between the logs so that they could keep out the bugs. And it's just kind of an amazing feat of engineering at a time where I'm sure that they didn't have any, disciplined knowledge of engineering to go down there, cut down all their own logs and build this building. So it's really impressive. And another thing this house really reminds us about, too, politically, is that, when he came down, he was able to really take advantage of a federal land grant called the Armed Occupation Act, which was enacted in 1842, and this allowed people coming down to the area to claim 160 acres of land if they would build on it and essentially produce, cultivate on it for 5 years. That land would then be granted to them. Now, all of this is also really super connected to what was going on in Florida at the time, which was, I think, the Second Seminole War was just about finishing up. So people were really interested in protecting land, cultivating land, creating communities in that land. So again, these buildings they have incredible stories.
I'm going to fast forward to two that came from St. Petersburg. One is authentic, one is a reproduction. So the first one, let's talk about the reproduction. So the Williams Park band shell. We've got this amazing photo in our archives when that band shell was actually moved to a downtown waterfront park, and then, of course, the hurricane of 1921 took care of that.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us what you have there that replicates the band shell.
So, yeah, we are super fortunate to have a replication of the Williams Park bandstand, which was erected down in Williams Park in downtown St. Petersburg, not far from where we're located right now. It was built in 1894, and it's in the Victorian style. It's a beautiful a piece of architecture with wonderful flourishes. It's one of my favorite architectural buildings on site. That the House of Seven Gables is really impressive. But these two, I mean, the detail really stands out. So I always encourage everyone to come and take a look at it. But I love the story of the band shell because you have at this time in history, in this area, a lot of people who are interested in creating community. The communities which were a bit smaller, maybe before the advent of the railroad, in early settlements, it was very hard to get to one another. You might have, you know, a settlement like Anona, which was up in the northwest corner, would take so long to get down to a settlement like St. Petersburg, which is massive today, but was a smaller settlement on what is now in the kind of Roser Park area. Mm-hmm. It would take days for them to kind of get together. But as the railroad opened up what would become Pinellas County, and as communities started to grow, and as you had more affluent northerners coming down, which had a wealth of different types of like civic societies, women's clubs, things like that, those people were interested in building these community spaces. So like a bandstand would be a place where you could go and have like a Christmas pageant or a picnic or listen to some music. So really this structure is, it's a replica, but it's incredibly and highly symbolic of community and what people at the turn of the century were trying to build down here in the St. Pete region, but of course all over what would become Pinellas County
and
as well.
And I mean, that's so true of Williams Park, because I mean, the park in the city's original plat design was pretty much centrally located, mm-hmm. known as City Park at that time. And for years, it was the venue where the city would get together, whether for music or you know, recreational activities. Even, you know, going into the 1960s and 70s, there was Vietnam anti-war movement, you know, things there. I mean, presidents have spoke there. So it was always like that community area, right, where the community got together.
Yeah, right. if you couldn't go into the pub, the public house, you went to the bandstand. That's where you had your public forum.
That's right, exactly. All right, so now my favorite building, right? And my favorite building is because I grew up across the street from this building that was located on 6th Avenue South near 5th Street. I remember walking into it. It wasn't a general store at that time, but it was a retail outlet. And I remember going into it as a young, curious kid. I think I was probably about 8 when I'd wander into this place, the H.C. Smith store.
It's one of my favorite buildings. And it's almost every visitor's favorite building, because it is that sundry shop. It's still set up as that sundry shop, right? You can go in. It is interpreted as a early 1900s space. It's got all the trappings of a sundry shop from that time period. It's got the old register. I don't know if you remember the register in there, but I believe it's the original.
I wasn't
one.
There in late 1800s, so but
you could have fooled me.
I did see the register at Heritage Village, and I would guesstimate that it probably was the original register. Yeah.
Well, it's massive and it's amazing. You know, now you just have little square readers and you just click a thing on it and all of a sudden money goes somewhere. But no, that's not how people had to do it in the past. That was real currency. But yeah, it's a fantastic place. It was located, as you said, in the approximate location of the All Children's Hospital today and the USF campus. And as I mentioned before, you know, that portion of St. Petersburg, that's what is now, you know, the old South East region, South St. Pete, that's where the Miranda Farm was originally back in the late 19th century, mm-hmm. one of the oldest homesteads in that area. So the nascent portions of St. Pete actually started kind of further south of what you understand it today.
Correct.
And so you have these like small mom and pop shops that are kind of popping up in that section. But as St. Petersburg grows and as Pinellas County grows, development starts to move out from those nascent areas that are probably super crunched up and right. not built to development or planning standards, you know, with old streets. And
yeah.
And so you have this build out towards like Central Avenue and further out down 4th Street.
And in St. Pete, the train changed all that. I mean, like the whole area down on Big Bayou, I mean, that was the original part of St. Petersburg, mm-hmm. right? And then when the train arrives, everybody starts building
out
off Central and First Avenues north and south. So,
which totally, from a planning perspective, makes complete sense. Mm-hmm. You've got new kinds of the Walmarts of the day, right? You've got, everybody loves Webb City, but they killed the small grocer.
Listen, don't be dissing my man Doc Webb, okay?
The A&P, you know, those larger kind of more organized companies kind of put a small mom and pop like the H.C. Smith store. It was hard for them. It was right. harder for them to survive.
But people, I mean, I know for a fact that people still would shop there mm-hmm. just because it was more convenient. I mean, the very first Publix in St. Petersburg was on 16th Street and I think it's 14th Avenue North. That was like a day's trip from, you know, from the Roser Park area. So, I mean, I remember those stores doing pretty well. The shopping centers of the 1950s pretty much changed that structure.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was your favorite part of about going in there when you were a kid? Because right now at Heritage Village, everyone's favorite part about going in there is we have these little Coca-Cola bottles you can get or little Sprite bottles in the actual glass container.
The 8 ounce? I remember those. And actually the coolest part of that was going around and finding the empty bottles and taking them back. Because back then they would pay you the deposit back on the actual, you know, the
we
Coke
should
or
do
the
that,
Sprite
but
bottles.
We're not that fancy.
No, but, you know, and it was, you know, because, you know, you'd gather, you'd hop on your bike and you'd ride everywhere around there and you'd find these bottles and you'd take them back there. Then you'd end up with like 15 cents, which was a fortune, right, back then. And you got yourself, you know, comic books and everything else that you wanted.
I was going to say that's penny fishy money right there.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. So, I mean, I know, you know, the structures are fantastic, right? So I got to ask you this. So really quickly, which is your favorite building?
Oh, my goodness. That's
come on.
A hard
come
one.
On.
I think for me, I really, and I think this will be surprising for some people, but I really love the Moore House.
Okay.
I really love the Moore House. And again, kind of going back to, you know, what I initially started out with is not necessarily the story of the Moore family, although that is incredibly compelling that I enjoy. But what I really enjoy about the Moore House is that vernacular style that you can see just obviously it's just exudes that cracker style, right?
Right.
So like the elevated foundation for the breeze to come through and the wide open porches and just the simplicity of it as well. It's just such a great example of that that cracker style for me.
So, I mean, again, the structures are all just obviously fantastic, and the love and caring that you guys have done to you know, to preserve those buildings is amazing. But, you know, like, you have more than that, right? There's more than buildings. So, for instance, like the fire engine,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, every little boy's dream and a little girl's dream is to go play on an old fire engine, and you guys have one.
We do. Yeah, so, I mean, it is something that our guests really love, and you know how I know?
How?
Because every time I go up to the building, there's like little face smudges on the window that we have to. So people love it. They're looking. They want to see it. And hopefully, you know, I think it's our goal to one day make that a little bit more available to people because it's hard to see.
Sure.
You can't quite go into the building. It's not big enough for people to go into. But
right.
The engine inside is the original engine from the Bellevue Biltmore.
Okay.
So that is incredibly awesome. I mean, built
yes.
in 1917. I don't know if your listeners know, but the Biltmore was kind of like an entity of it in and of itself, right? It was like a small, not city, but it had...
It was self-contained.
It was self-contained.
Right.
It had its own amenities. It had its own, well, fire department. And so this was its own very own fire engine.
Well, I mean, it was literally so far out there,
yeah.
away from civilization, that
they
it had to be
had
self-contained.
To. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. So over the years, you know, my head's been filled with just useless historical facts, right, that only come in handy when you're at a, you know, local brewery and they're doing, like, trivia night.
Right.
So I the one fact that I learned over the years, and I didn't realize this, is that by the start of World War II, fewer than 50% of the American homes had indoor plumbing,
mm-hmm.
which was just shocking to me, right? Now,
I wouldn't survive.
Does your outhouse work?
It depends on how you use it, I suppose.
But it's a great example because, like, kids now, I mean, you know, I spent, you know, a million years teaching at St. Pete High. And when I left there, the kids thought that what they see now in downtown St. Pete was always St. Petersburg, mm-hmm. right? So I showed them a photo of late 1800 photo of Central Avenue looking west when Central Avenue was still just a sand road, right? And then there was a few buildings and behind them were outhouses. So I kind of explained to them what they were and they looked at me like I was speaking foreign language, right? So.
Well, and, you know, going, we always think that history is a movement of progress, right? That's the concept that people have, that we're moving forward and it's always better. And, you know, the more you learn about history, the more you realize that's not real. Like going back to the Bellevue Biltmore, there used to be an amazing velodrome there, and they used to have bicycle races and stuff like that. And I'm super into like the Tour de France and stuff like that. I went a couple of years ago to watch it, and I'm like, why can't we have a velodrome today?
True. True. All right, so, you know, when the Spanish finally realized that there was no gold in Florida, right, and an alternative plan to what they wanted to do for La Florida was turn this colony of theirs into a massive sugarcane field. So I see that you have, you know, you've got a sugarcane mill, you've got a boiling shed. Do you ever do demonstrations? Do they work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we don't, the actual sugarcane grinder, we don't let anyone put their fingers in or anything, because
that could be
a massive problem.
Right.
But yeah, that could create tears. But we do use it on a level. We do use the boiling shed. We actually work with the Largo Historical Society, and one of their members comes up and does sugarcane grinding at our events, and he's really amazing when he's doing those things. But you know, that is one of the smaller, we call them structures, they're not buildings, and that's how we you know, categorize those assets on site. But that's one of the smaller structures that we have on site, but it's still such a incredible symbol of Florida agriculture, right? So the sugarcane industry being one of the bigger industries of Florida, that's a great way to kind of pull kids into the history again of Florida and Florida agriculture.
Gotcha. So when can our listeners explore Heritage Village, and where can they find out more information?
Yeah, so Heritage Village is open to the public Wednesday through Saturday from 10 to 4, and on Sundays from 1 to 4. And because this is a Pinellas County park, everyone is very fortunate to get free admission coming into this park. There's no admission, so that is something that we are very proud about. And then, of course, we have other ways of visiting, quote-unquote, Heritage Village. If you're out of state or you just can't get to Heritage Village or it's raining, you can go on our website. We have a virtual tour, and we also have an app that you can access right from your web browser. So you don't even have to come. We want you to come. Don't get me wrong. But you can experience the wonderful history of Heritage Village right from your own home.
Fantastic. Monica, thank you so much for joining us on Historically St. Pete.
Thank you, Rui. This was a sincere pleasure.
So stop by the St. Pete Museum of History on your next visit to the St. Pete Pier and explore the rich and unique history of the Sunshine City. We're located at the entrance of the pier, and we're open 7 days a week. You can visit historystpete.org for more details on our exhibits and our tours and boat tours and trolley tours and all those good tours that we do around the city. Thank you so much for listening, and join us next week on Historically St. Pete.